Well, welcome to Week to Week, the political roundtable from the Commonwealth Club of California. This is Monday, June 29th, 2015. Thanks for joining us here today in San Francisco. I am John Zipperer, your host for Week to Week, and the Commonwealth Club's Vice President of Media and Editorial. We have so much stuff to talk about, and even through today, big things started happening. This was the day we learned to stop feeling superior to Europe because of its debt problems with Greece, because now Puerto Rico is announcing that it is in danger of default on its debt, so they're our own little Greece. But on today's program, we are going to talk about some of these recent landmark Supreme Court rulings, the flap over the Confederate flag, the latest entrance into the 2016 race for the presidency, as well as some other local and national topics in the political arena. So let's get started. As usual, any opinions that are expressed by those of us up here are those of the speakers and not of the Commonwealth Club. Let's meet our panelists today. And in fact, we've got an all San Francisco Chronicle panel. So I'm going to start on the far end there.
I think we were cheering the loudest.
On the far end of the stage, we have Carla Marinucci, a senior political writer at the Chronicle. She's also the Spin Cycle political blogger.
Thank you.
Next to her is Joe Garofoli, political reporter at the Chronicle and also a political blogger at sfgate.com. And to my immediate left, you know, sitting-wise, is Deborah J. Saunders, the columnist at The Chronicle and the token conservative blogger at sfgate.com. Remember that when she says something you disagree with. Okay, so please use the question cards that are spread throughout the room. Write down, submit questions. I will do my best to ask as many as possible. Now let's get right into this. Let's start with the Supreme Court. June is a month in which the U.S. Supreme Court ends its term. And it releases major rulings, usually. And this year, they released a lot of them. So let's talk about some of them one by one, and let's start with one of the biggest, the same-sex marriage ruling. Carla, this really superpowered yesterday's Pride Parade.
Wow. I mean, I covered the Pride Parade yesterday. I think what was so interesting to watch was the amount of corporate representation. You know, 8,000 Apple employees, they stretched to almost, it seems like, the entire length of Market Street. Every major corporation was there, as well as religious organizations. It just showed how far this country has come on this issue. And I think it showed where some of the Republicans are still in a time machine on this issue, because we saw Scott Walker talk about how they're going to immediately, he wants to immediately start a fight for a constitutional amendment. You saw Bobby Jindal out there and Rick Santorum and a few other Republicans saying they're going to continue to fight on this issue. But meanwhile, you know, I just did a story. We're looking at the gay and lesbian communities already looking ahead at the next fight. And I think there's some really interesting aspects of this decision. Now, gays and lesbians, after fighting for this for more than a decade, I mean, are melting into the melting pot. And I talked to a lot of folks yesterday on the parade route saying, you know, we've fought to be just like everybody else for, you know, more than a decade, and now we are. And what happens when you're part of the melting pot, and does sort of that specialness go away? And there was actually some laments yesterday. I was hearing that
the freedom to be boring.
In terms of political, yeah. You know, this is something. This is an issue that has driven fundraising, energizing. Had a generation of activists fired up. Now they have what they wanted, so are they going to be able to get that kind of activity and action together to work for a federal non-discrimination law? Because it's been pointed out, you can get married, today, you can be fired tomorrow, you can be kicked out of your apartment the next day, still for being gay or lesbian. So I think that issue, the transgender rights issue, is going to continue to fire them up. But you really saw in San Francisco yesterday the wide range of support. And I think this is going to, and we can talk about, you know, 2016 election. Going forward, where do the Republicans go on this and a lot of other issues?
Yeah, and one thing, when you say that, it's the movement's almost going to have to go backwards to what it was. What coalesced it, you know, around marriage was when folks started talking about love and commitment and something that gay folks and straight folks all shared. We all share. We all want to be loved and at some level. And and so, but now they're going to have to go back to talking about rights and kind of the nitty-gritty of non-discrimination laws. And that was the challenge that the research that gay rights advocates had done for years. They said, you know, we're not winning because we're talking about, well, it's not fair. And it's true, it's not fair, but politically it's hard to coalesce around it's not fair. It's easier to coalesce around, well, we have a loving relationship. Or straight folks have a loving relationship. Why shouldn't gay folks, et cetera, et cetera? So, but now they're going to have to get back to enforcing the marriage provisions, to enforcing the discrimination stuff. And that's going to be a harder political lift, I think.
I think what's really amazing is how quickly this issue has changed. Yeah. I was trying to think, the only thing I can think of that compares to it is ending prohibition, where the country just flipped so completely. And now you have, so in 2000, 62% of California voters voted to have a definition of marriage be one man, one woman, right? 4 years later, Gavin Newsom opens up City Hall, and it's the winter of love. Carl and I went over there.
A license.
Actually, it's true. We left the morning after that weekend. We walked out of City Hall and people clapped. Well, because we've been looking for Mayor Newsom and his usual. We do.
I thought
she's
you were
going
to break
wife.
Some news here.
I know. No. Anyway, but I mean, you know, of course, Gavin Newsom, you can never find him when you want to talk to him. You can only find him when you don't want to talk to him. And Democrats were furious with Gavin Newsom. Dianne Feinstein, what is it, too much, too fast, too quickly, something to that effect. And really, I wrote this at the time. I still believe it. He was telling City Hall, let's break laws we don't like. And if mayors can do that in San Francisco, they can do it anywhere, can't they? I mean, to me, it was a dangerous precedent. That's what Bill Lockyer, the Democratic Attorney General, argued. And they won in some courts, they lost in others. But basically, when the California Supreme Court said, yes, gay marriage is a right, same-sex marriage is a right, the voters responded by once again passing a law that said marriage between one man, one woman. And then, you know, the courts got involved again. So this is, and I mean, let's remember, it wasn't that long ago. We know that Bill Clinton signed the Defense of Marriage Act. We know that Barack Obama, when he ran for president, said he thought marriage should be between a man and a woman. And
Hillary Clinton,
too. And so why do I say all this? Because now having that position is you're a hater. And there's going to be, the question is, where do Republicans go? Well, the question is, for years, the gay community rightly asked for tolerance. Does it have any for people who don't agree with it? And that's going to be the fight that Republicans, I think, can make. I think it's insane to try to relitigate this, as some will call on doing. But the question is, if somebody says, no, I don't want to have this, you know, I respect the law, you do what you want to do, but I don't. That's not for me. Is the government going to force them to go along? And if you read the Kennedy decision, he says people of goodwill can have different opinions on same-sex marriage, but there's nothing in this decision that protects that. If in politics, in places in states, in places where people have passed laws like that, they generally put in provisions with those protections. But it doesn't happen with the Supreme Court decision, so we'll see where it goes.
Well, and that's the case that Scott Walker, the Wisconsin governor who's running for president, has made as well. He has said, you know, his state will respect this ruling, but he did what he said, what you just said, which is now will opponents respect what, you know, people who don't agree with this ruling say. What do you think about Chief Justice John Roberts? He did not like this ruling, and he said something that I thought was kind of curious. He said what a lot of critics often say about the Supreme Court when they rule on some big controversial thing, which is basically you're a bunch of unelected judges that should be left to voters. Kind of weird to have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court saying that, but was he really making a stronger case that this shouldn't have come to the Supreme Court?
Well, I mean, he did lay out he laid out the reason why he disagreed with it and why he considered this to be judicial activism. The irony here, of course, is that he was, he wrote the opinion that upheld Obamacare And I have to say, the law is pretty clear. It says exchanges under the states. And I think John Roberts just felt, I don't dare tell 6 million people they don't get federal subsidies anymore. So he, I think, constructed an argument. And in order to not look like a judicial activist, he played one.
Well,
so you have him doing that on the one hand with that case. And then on this other hand, you know, he basically talks about how the courts are supposed to adjudicate issues.
Yeah.
And why he said in the end of his decision, he said, celebrate this. You know, I know that there are a lot of people out there, celebrate this, but don't celebrate the Constitution, because this does not come from the Constitution. He believes it's a states' right issue. And states' rights, in my view, that's voters. People live in places and they choose the kind of laws that they want among themselves. So,
you know, I thought it was interesting that you saw in the wake of the same-sex marriage, you know, candidates like Mike Huckabee talking about an imperial court and so forth. We didn't hear these kind of comments when they passed the Hobby Lobby decision, but, you know, that's just the way it goes here. Yeah. And I just think it's going to be fascinating to watch how Scott Walker, who is considered a very strong candidate, you know, in terms of Republican hopes for 2016, how he's going to extricate himself from this whole issue of a constitutional amendment. This may play great in Iowa. It's just not going to play, particularly when now we know, you know, 40% of young Republicans. This, as Deborah says, is going just one way, and I just don't think Bobby Jindal, Huckabee, Santorum, the rest of these candidates are going to be able to manage this.
He has the most to lose in Iowa, because he needs to win Iowa or do very well in Iowa to have a springboard, because nobody knows what really who Scott Walker is out of political nerds like the people in this room. So he needs to get a national name. And if he wins Iowa, he has a very good chance of winning. He's, I think, in one or two in the most polls. Or very early polls. He's from neighboring Wisconsin. And he has to appeal to those 100,000 Republican voters, people who vote in the Republican or in the Republican caucus in Iowa. And he's going to have to like lean to that there and then somehow, you know, move quickly to the center when he gets to New Hampshire.
But what's new about that? I mean, don't...
Well, you know, I think... I'll tell you one thing that's new about it. The Republicans have a bunch of really... I mean, 2012 was not my favorite year, right? We didn't have a stellar group of candidates running. This time, there were a lot of fascinating candidates who look like the future. They're the future now. Hillary Clinton, not so much. And so if you have... And I have to say, I think Scott Walker's talking about a constitutional amendment... That's the past. And so people may disagree with the legal reasoning of this, but I do think it hurts him in the long run. I hear what Joe says about
Iowa.
Candidates
look like the future, but I think this is the problem. You're getting a whole litany of issues now where the Republicans are getting just muscled into this right-wing corner. And we're talking about, when we talk about same-sex marriage, Obamacare is another one. Wanting to turn back the clock on that, we still have a lot of them saying that is their absolute goal, to repeal Obamacare. Immigration, minimum wage hikes, Cuba. How many of these issues where it seems like they want to go back in the time machine, that the voters aren't with them on a lot of these issues anymore? They're not going to be able to undo a lot of things that have been done. And I think that's where the Republicans are going to have a challenge when you're talking about, you know, Cuba, for instance, or Obamacare still. They're still talking about Obamacare.
But you yourself said you don't think Scott Walker will do well with this. So to say that they're all like that just doesn't seem consistent to me.
I think with a number of the Republican candidates, when we're looking ahead at 2016, I don't know how they come back from where public opinion is going.
But do you think that they can, you know, there's a theory out there that they secretly, Republicans like the two Supreme Court decisions because they can bark about them. Oh, this is terrible! We should repeal Obamacare. We should. But then they can say, well, it's the law of the land. I can't really do anything about it. So they can, you know, have their cake and eat it.
There's no question. There's a chunk of the party that feels that way. I think that's especially true for consultants.
Yeah, because they can still milk the cow.
They just want it to be gone, and they want to move on. Yeah. Younger Republicans feel this way. So that's it. I mean, I know a lot of Republicans who just feel that they're sick of – this is a culture where they don't even want to fight.
Right.
And so that you may have a feeling about how the law should work and how things should change, but you're not interested in seeming as though you're bashing gay people. So I think that there is – that there is a – I think Joe's absolutely right.
Yeah. Wow. Can you say that again?
No, I can't.
Here, have some water. Have some water. You're choking on that one.
I'll work on it.
So Senator and presidential candidate Ted Cruz called this Thursday-Friday mixture there when all these two big rulings came out on Obamacare and same-sex marriage. He called them, quote, the darkest 24 hours in our nation's history. So apparently worse than Pearl Harbor, 9/11, Selma, or the release of a Madonna movie. Let me ask it another way. Are there, and let's stick with the Republicans. Is there a Republican candidate who is...
Can we talk about the Democrats?
We'll get to them. Okay. We'll get to them. Don't worry. But is there a Republican who are perhaps handling this well or who are well-situated to try to position around these kind of political landmines?
Rand Paul did something interesting. Now, Rand Paul, to me, is one of the most fascinating characters to watch in this race because I think he can appeal to voters outside what you consider to be the traditional GOP base. So Rand Paul comes out with a piece in Time magazine that says, get government completely out of marriage. So that at least seems to be a future-looking position where you're not mired in fighting this, long controversy, and you're moving forward. I think Jeb Bush had a good response. He said, I love people, so let's move on.
People.
Come on, Joe.
People.
But, it's going to – this is what's going to be so interesting. We're going to have a couple more Republican candidates get in this week.
Chris Christie.
Chris Christie is one. John Kasich of Ohio is another. That'll make it 15. And then, of course, we have the fabulous Donald Trump who's going to just.
And by the way, she traveled and Trump won. So those of you who think that Donald Trump is somebody who shouldn't even be covered in the media.
Wow.
Well, we can get into this topic now if you want. But, the whole Donald Trump issue, it just has us all sort of, divided
on this
because
demeaning ourselves.
I did cover Donald Trump when he ran in 2000, and he's run several times. I at this point, I think this is the most cynical presidential campaign you're ever going to see, and it's really just a matter of time before Kanye West runs for president too, because this is so valuable to him as a marketing, and he knows it. He has no intention of being president. He has no intention of staying in the race. I'm positive of that. And having traveled with him on Trump One, with the, by the way, round bed and the gold faucets and so forth that he has, I mean, the guy was a kick to travel with. And we went down, to Jay Leno, to the green room, and, hang out with Anthony Robbins. And he is just a kick. But he has no serious business being in this race. It is a marketing thing. He knows how valuable it is to be out on the front page of the New York Times. That's worth millions to him in the Trump name. The question is, when are the stories going to come out about the many lawsuits and the many, I've written about it. He had Trump University here in California. Average people were said they were bilked to the tune of $35,000, $45,000 to belong to this real estate school that was going to make them millions. There are lawsuits like this all over the country. It's just a matter of time. We saw NBC today cut all their ties with him.
This is a money loser for him now.
It's a matter of time. But his, with his comment about Mexicans and so forth, I mean, this is a guy.
I suspect most of you heard about the Mexican thing, but why don't you explain what he said?
In his announcement, his formal announcement, which wasn't a formal announcement, he just went on, blathered on for an hour about how... when Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're sending people who have lots of problems. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And I assume there are some good people, he said about Mexico. At that point, Univision decided to cut ties with him. They have a deal with him on the Miss Universe pageant. And today NBC said, based on these comments, we are no longer doing business with him. And, of course, the Apprentices, a show that they run. I mean, it is starting to cost him. But the fact is, this leaves us in a dilemma because how do we cover this guy? He's going to be on stage at the debates. He's going to be killing all these other candidates. He's already insulting them up and down. It's a real dilemma for the Republican Party.
And the thing is, he's giving money to the Clintons.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been a support. They were at his wedding. I mean, he's
And he hasn't voted.
He's just
six of the last primary elections for president. He hasn't voted.
Well, I still think I hold out hope that he will not be a real candidate, because he can say he's a candidate, but you're on the clock. So he's on the clock now. He's 30 days to really give over his true financial disclosure forms. You can extend it like twice, apparently, for 45 days. So if he has a couple of months to really say, I'm in or I'm out for legit. Because right now it is a marketing ploy, and it's just shameless. But the problem is, as Carla said, in the media you're kind of between two places, because he is running, I think, third in New Hampshire.
He's running second nationally in two big polls.
Yeah, in Iowa, he's down in the bottom of the heap with the Jim Doles and the Carlys.
So he will be on that debate stage. The first debate is within a month in Ohio. He will be there.
Yeah.
How do we deal with that in the media? We know this is a phony campaign.
Just to play devil's advocate, though, if you're a Republican candidate, and I've seen the headlines, Politico.com had something that the Republicans are just, apoplectic about him being there and having popularity. But that also allows you to position yourself as, if you're up there and you're up there with Krusty the Clown, you can be the sober candidate. I mean, the serious one. And let him spout off, let him get the cheap applause. And the cheap laughs, I understand that. But, you can play it well for yourself if you're one of the sober ones.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, though, look at how he's criticizing Jeb Bush. He's criticized, legitimate people who have come up through public service. And this is where I think there's a real danger in us feeding into this kind of circus.
I'm not.
How are you going to cover? You are going to have to cover his comments, and
when I have to.
The social media chatter and everything will be Trump right afterwards.
First debate, top 10, in the polls. If there's a reason to, but we all know he's a joke, so it's just.
I thought he might sue you for saying that.
He can't get much out of me.
Okay. Well, we are going to get to the other presidential candidates, including the Democrats. But I did want to cover a couple other of the Supreme Court decisions. There was also one regarding the Texas abortion clinic rule.
Yeah.
Could someone explain what Texas had done? And basically, they didn't strike it down. They kind of put a stay on it.
They asked them to go back.
So this was something that would have closed down
nine abortions.
Yes. All but nine.
That's right.
And
this was a very effective way for anti-choice groups to get around Roe v. Wade. They put very heavy restrictions on performing abortions in Texas. The standards had to be equal to hospital standards. Basically, I'm simplifying it a lot, but the fact is many of these clinics operate in rural areas. They were completely safe, but the fact is, by putting that kind of restriction on it, having a hospital association made it untenable, and they were under danger of closing down. And yeah, I think that was a big decision, and I think that's an example of the kind of thing we may see conservatives try to do when we're talking about countering the same-sex decision. Also, with religious rights laws.
Okay, let me just say something about the justices. So we've got five Republicans and four Democrats. The four Democrats never deviate. We might as well just have one of them, because they all vote in a block. And that is something that I just think it's worth mentioning, because we keep talking about how the Republicans have reasoned on all this. The Democrats, they let Kennedy write the marriage decision. They let Roberts write the Obamacare decision. And then they just pretty much agree with each other. They really do vote in a very partisan lockstep manner. And so let's not just look at this about how Republicans do it, because you just don't see a Democrat saying, I really think the Constitution says this, or they don't deviate. It's a little scary.
Roberts got a lot of flack from the right for going over on the Obamacare thing. Kennedy, of course, is the so-called swing justice.
There are two swing justices.
Are you including Roberts?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but, and I think this is the second time. This is the second time John Roberts saved the Affordable Care Act, and I understand why he did it both times. I mean, he doesn't like judicial activism, and he doesn't want to have the courts overthrow this huge law. But both times he's done it with some rather specious arguments to say that a penalty is really a tax when it doesn't say it in the law, and then and when it's clear. I mean, if you read the decisions, it's pretty clear. No,
no,
no. No what? Did you read the decision, Michelle? No, that's the first. At any rate,
you applauded, folks. Remember.
I mean, the thing is, he didn't, in order to not look like a judicial activist, he made arguments that really were designed to prop up a law that was incredibly poorly written and drafted in such a way that...
And there had been, sorry to interrupt, but there had been some commentary at the time that because he was the swing vote on that, he did that. That do you think if he had not been the swing vote... I mean, I'm asking you to read his mind, but I mean that he wouldn't have, and he could have been voted against it if he knew.
Yes, I think, and this is the thing that's so interesting about this latest Obamacare decision, because they didn't need him this time.
Yeah.
They had Kennedy.
This was
63. And Kennedy was appalled at the first Obamacare decision that Roberts wrote. He thought that was wrong. So now you have him basically, I think in order to not have a result that he felt would put the court in bad favor in people's minds. He came up with one specious argument, and he had to follow it up with another.
Now, let's move on to another Supreme Court decision that sounds, I think, a bit drier and more arcane, because it doesn't even involve California, except that it could have impacted us. And that is a redistricting matter from Arizona. Can I throw it to one of you to explain what the...
Yeah, I think that's arguably, it's very dry, but it's very important to us here in California. Basically, our process of redistricting is going to be held intact because of this decision. And it's, a couple years ago, instead of the political districts in the state being drawn by politicians in a back room, there was a citizens panel that was voted up, and they drew the lines. So, and it was a fairly rigorous process to get on this committee. And so it actually it's one of those rare instances where power is taken out of the hands of the politicians and put into the hands of everyday citizens who have an intense desire to talk for months on end about political districts. But it's a very important one to us, and here in California, it preserves our way. It preserves the way in Arizona, I think, was the original state that brought the case. That's a good one. I think that all of us can agree. Arnold Schwarzenegger, let's give props to Republican. That was his idea, correct? And
Abel Maldonado.
That's true. It was two Republicans behind that one, and so that was like I think
so
that's that, good
that
news. We can
had,
all
that could have had big impact in California had it gone the other way.
Yeah.
The Obamacare decision would not have had an impact on California. But let's I think you can't overstate that the impact on that decision on Obama and his legacy. I mean, I think that is huge, and that is something that also is going to color the argument, everything about the 2016 election.
Well, let's move into that, because that was another one of our topics that I wanted to talk about. And that what you just said, the legacy, some people have said that last week was kind of a legacy week for the president, because he has had some terrible weeks and months this year. You know, I mean, politically, it's been a very rough time for the president. And in one week, he gets a trade deal. It's not the trade deal, but it's an important vote giving him power to negotiate this trade deal. And in fact, I've already got a question from one of you on this, as well as Supreme Court decisions on Obamacare, same-sex marriage, two signature issues for him. So was it a legacy week, Deborah? Is that making too much of it?
No, I don't think it does at all. I think that the fact that that Obamacare has been upheld is important for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think same-sex marriage is important for him. And I think the fact that Republicans saved his bacon on trade is important too. So these are big wins, and I think it's been a great week for him.
Yeah, Joe.
I'm gonna disagree with that. I think that's a mixed bag. I think it's a good win. It's a big win for Democrats, not necessarily progressives, because I think the progressives, liberals, hate the trade deal, and I think they think Obama sold out on that. And I think, and I can't give same-sex marriage to Obama because he took him a while to evolve on it. You know, I'm 3 months before election day. I need some gay money. Absolutely. Since Joe Biden said it 3 weeks ago, I don't know. I think it's a good win for Democrats writ large. But
I still think that when you remember what the 2008 election was fought over, and Obama, the motto, the mantra was change you can believe in, and healthcare is that change that presidents since Harry Truman have been trying to enact, and Obama can say he delivered. And I think you're right. The law has many,
if
many.
If you like your doctor, many, you can keep him.
Many,
if you like
many
your
issues,
plan,
and there,
you can keep
there are
it.
So many problems. But the fact is, millions of Americans do have it, and to undo it, and the Republicans still have nothing to offer.
That's not true.
Let's hear them talk about it then in the next, as they try to keep repealing it and replacing it. If that's
it was
what they're going to do.
It was there. It was but it was Mitt Romney's plan.
But the fact is that it was old plan. I think he has reason to celebrate. He was just here in San Francisco. I have to say, on the trade deal, it was interesting because I was in the pool with the president. We were at Tom Steyer's house, and I watched that whole group all come together. And it was right after Nancy Pelosi sort of delivered the shiv to him there at the on the House floor, and there was hugging and kissing going on. Literally, they were kissing and making up. So I think things have, we'll see how the whole issue, but the fast track was very, very important to him. And it created a lot of, a dilemma for a lot of Democrats who, Silicon Valley wanted it.
That's what this question is here, in fact. Who in the Bay Area is particularly affected by this?
Silicon Valley wanted this. Yeah. Most big corporations wanted it. Labor hated it. Mm-hmm. And that's where for a lot of the Democrats in the Bay Area delegation had to go against it because of that. When you talk about Garamendi, Mike Honda, who's in the middle of a district that, seriously impacted Silicon Valley, they had a real dilemma. But they went with labor in the end. Labor really showed their muscle, I think, on that.
I just find it fascinating that the president went to Congress right before the vote and he was that far apart and didn't even know it. And that he had to go to that he was so far behind among Democrats, and that he was so late in going there. It showed to me how out of touch he's come within his own party. And so not only did Nancy Pelosi say no to him and vote against him, but it was such a feckless gesture.
Well, how many times has he come up to the Hill? He
that's
rarely
my point.
Does that. He never
and so,
does
so,
it.
But wouldn't it sort of make sense if you're going to do it when you can actually turn something around? And shouldn't you have the intelligence to know whose votes you need, how many you are, and that it is savable before you do that, instead of doing it in a gesture that shows that you've lost your party completely?
Well, that's been the rap on him since day one, that he has not done that. He's not done the nitty-gritty.
Before it used to be the Republicans, now you're seeing it with Democrats, that you're seeing
on this
that
issue,
having problems
with
it.
Okay. Let's talk about another topic, and that is the Confederate flag. In the wake of the shooting deaths of those 9 folks at a historic African-American church in South Carolina, states and private organizations have moved rapidly, talk about another big shift that's happening very quickly, to dissociate themselves from the Confederate flag. On the political side, this has been a transition led by Republican politicians, including South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley and its 2 U.S. senators, as well as businesses, Walmart, eBay, Amazon, Sears, NASCAR, all saying, we're not going to have stuff to do with this. Carla, this is a symbol. You can say it's just a symbol, but it's a very important, powerful symbol to many people, both many folks who love it and many people who hate it. Is this a ground shift moment for this topic?
I think it is in a way because, you had a tremendous argument from Nikki Haley. I think she gets a lot of credit for saying, look, this is part of our history, but now that history belongs in a museum. It is no longer belongs in the State House. You did see a shift on it. And this was another time, I think, in this last week where President Obama once again was able to take that message, you know, that the eulogy for the pastor in South Carolina. I think he delivered that and was able to talk about race. Hillary Clinton here, I have to say, at the U.S. Conference of Mayors, like, covered her there. She gave a great speech on race. I think she did knock it out of the park. It was a very substantive speech to these mayors about where does this conversation go. It's not just Democrats, though. It's Republicans get credit too for having this conversation. I think some of them still are shying away from it, but I think we've seen some real thoughtful conversations for the first time. I mean, every time one of these incidents happens, we've seen, you know, we have to have a national conversation on this. But this time, I think there was a real turning point with the way this tragedy came down in South Carolina and how many people were personally touched by the reaction from the families in South Carolina. It was a combination of a number of things that moved that political needle, finally, I think.
Do you think it was because it was in a church?
I mean, yeah, I think it was
that is grounded in church, really both parties.
The fact that he posed with a Confederate flag right before the shooting, I think, was also pivotal in this. But the fact that it was in a church, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, but and again, it's good that these things happen, this reaction happened. But politicians were leading from behind. You know, they took nine people getting shot in a church in cold blood before they moved. It took that happened before eBay and all these other places, the corporate folks moved. You know, it's the flag was there the day before. Nobody did anything. But it took this to do it. I wonder, too,
if this whole incident is going to move anything on the gun control issue. Hillary Clinton says she's not going to drop that one going toward 2016. We'll see if that's the case and where... If this is another issue where we're going to see public opinion shift, as, you know, every week we get some other horrendous incident happening, it seems, whether public opinion will shift on this and whether the activism will push some kind of gun control laws.
So what do you think of some of the criticism from folks about whether certain politicians would say this was an act of racism? There's a lot of online chatter, and who
wouldn't say it was an act of racism?
There were a lot of politicians. Well, there are a lot of Republicans. There were a number of Republican politicians.
Who would say the flag? I mean, there are
people.
No.
They were specifically talking about the shooting. And they basically were doing we don't know, we can't say. It certainly seems like racism, but
it was.
It was racism. Yeah.
It was.
Yes.
Yeah. So if people were clueless, so that's on them.
Enough said. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about those other candidates. And Deborah, this is a question from the audience that's right in here. Who are the other potential candidates for presidential nominations? And Democrats, they specifically ask about. So let's talk about the Democrats. There are currently three.
Jim Webb.
Four.
Jim Webb's announced?
Yes, Jim Webb's
announced. Yeah,
he's not on the trail.
And Martin O'Malley.
Yeah,
Bernie Sanders
is polling at like a half of a percent.
Hillary Clinton. Yeah. I think Bernie Sanders is so interesting to watch because he was here in San Francisco. We interviewed him. I think we've talked about him here before. He is just a plain-spoken, very interesting guy to watch and interesting in how he's shaping the debate. You know, he's just out there. I'm a socialist. And he's unapologetic about a lot of his ideas. I think in that way he's refreshing to talk to. It just lets it out there. You can tell he doesn't poll what he says, and I think that is appealing to a lot of progressive Democrats.
And he is polling pretty highly.
Yeah.
That 15%.
Yeah.
Which is you know, amazing. So, like, he's the Donald Trump of the Democrats because he doesn't really have a chance.
No, I would not.
Hold on, folks.
That took 45 minutes longer than I thought it would.
It's true. Joe said it'll be something that doesn't even matter.
I had about 10 minutes. Yeah. 10 minutes.
No,
that would
you
happen.
Can't compare him to Donald Trump. I think he's a serious candidate.
But he doesn't have a chance. And he doesn't have a chance of winning the nomination, which is okay. But what his function is to move Hillary Clinton to the left. Now, when there are Republicans in the Republican field who move the rest of the field to the right, everybody says, oh, that's so horrible, you're taking them away from the center. So now Bernie Sanders is in there, moving Hillary Clinton to the left. The triangulation years of the Clintons are over, and that's his function.
I think it's good that he's in there. He's going to create, I think, some interesting conversations, and I hope a good debate. I think she needs to have somebody out
right.
there.
She definitely needs somebody
yes,
out there.
Yes, absolutely.
And he's sharp.
Martin O'Malley.
Yeah. And she has to show him respect because of the respect that he's getting. That 15%, which is, you know, that's decent, you know, from someone who is not well known at all.
The thing we saw in 2008 with Barack Obama, and I'm convinced that she did not win the nomination because she voted for the Iraq War, as did all of the other major Democrats in the field except for Barack Obama. And so while he was a different, I mean, obviously it was wonderful to see an African-American in the race, and he was a great speaker and everything else, I think the war is really what moved people.
Initially moved people.
Yes,
I think that got him
absolutely.
A hearing. It got him
exactly.
a hearing. Yeah, yeah.
I think with the Bernie Sanders vote, you see that there's this group of Democrats who don't necessarily don't want her to be the nominee, and they're looking with hunger for somebody different. And the fact that, I mean, Bernie Sanders is, you know, he's what he is, but he's not your idea of. I mean, Martin O'Malley's trying to run as the young guy. You see him without his shirt on at the beach, and he's trying to show, hey, I'm the future. You wouldn't expect somebody his age to be her competition.
Yeah.
It's
right.
fascinating.
Yeah, no question.
But he has legitimacy to ask her the question, okay, you're against, you want to talk about income inequality and, you know, corporate power and blah, blah, blah. Then why did you take all these tens of millions of dollars, you know, from corporate entities? Why are your husband's policies when he was in office? You know, what about Glass-Steagall? What about your role in
voting for Iraq when he did not?
Right, mm-hmm. right. And so she can call him out. He can call her out on all these things with legitimacy. That's going to be that will be fascinating. That will be fascinating. And hopefully, he gets enough airtime to make those arguments in a full way.
Jim Webb is fascinating. The former senator.
I don't think anyone's ever said that.
He used to be former. He was a one-term senator from Virginia. He used to be a Republican. He was Secretary of the Navy, and he's tried to curb the drug war, and that's sort of an area where he can challenge Hillary Clinton, although she seems to be shifting on that as well. And he was somebody who was very pro-military, who turned against the Iraq War. He was against having women in the Citadel when he was a Republican years ago. So he's one of those, like Bernie Sanders, he's quirky. And I don't know, quirky candidates don't usually win nominations.
No one's ever called Hillary Clinton quirky.
Yeah, no one's ever.
He also had nice things to say about the Confederate flag. Too.
Yes, well, that's right. That he has. Yeah. That is.
Yeah.
So
that's quirky. That's very quirky.
Okay. Well, Deborah, you've said in the past on this very stage that if this election is between Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, it would be a very bad thing. Clinton, I still think, is a lock ultimately on the Democratic side. But what do you think Jeb Bush's chance are in the GOP? It's not nearly as strong as... Do you think another candidate? I mean,
So Carla and I saw Jeb Bush 2 months ago when he spoke to the auto dealers, and I was not very impressed at all. I just thought he did a mediocre job, and he just doesn't look like he cares a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Since then, he went on the paleo diet, right?
He lost 30 pounds.
He's looking good. Yeah. He looks like he cares now. He does. He cares.
Is that an Al Gore reference subtly?
No.
Okay, like a bloated, okay.
No, it isn't. And also, I have to say, I think Republicans are taking another look at him, that he has tuned things in a little bit. So while I have thought he really, a couple months ago, I thought he really didn't have a chance winning the Republican nomination, I'm not so sure anymore. And I think he had a good reaction to the same-sex marriage case that people can find has hit the right tone. And so
I think a guy to watch is John Kasich. I mean, nobody knows who he is right now, governor of Ohio. He's another guy that I covered in 2000. He ran for president. He came out here. We traveled around with him. A very sharp guy, an important state. He also had a good reaction on the same-sex marriage, basically saying, look, this is the law. We're going to move on. And we're going to see how he plays. He has a lot of catching up to do, but he has on board Fred Davis,
who created the famous Demon Sheep ad
for Carly Fiorina. So that, you know, this is a guy who's very media and knows how to go viral on media. Carly Fiorina is another one we should watch.
I was going to say, I have a question here. Yeah. Talk about Carly Fiorina. She expresses some great ideas. Sheep.
Deb loves. I want to say, not to sleep on. Don't sleep on Walker. Despite what we were saying earlier, he gets the evangelicals. He gets the Christian folks. He's tapped into the anti-union thing. He busted the union bad in Wisconsin. Outside of our bubble here, that plays well in a lot of places. And union membership is shrinking. He comes off. He can go to the. I'm gonna cut the state budget, in which he has. In fact, they're actually in deficit. But don't sleep on him.
Well, I have to say, at the Republican convention, I walked up to a bunch of people I know, and asked them who they liked, and Walker was the name I heard the most. I just think that he's in trouble with Republicans in his state. They want to raise fees at any rate, and he's against that, and they're sort of turning on him. I think he's hitting a bit of a slump, and he's got to find his way out of it. Carly Fiorina. Okay. So Carly Fiorina has been great on the trail, and Republicans like having her out there because she really knows how to say things about Hillary Clinton that a man might hesitate to say lest he seem...
Because she's a woman or because she has been a business leader and is a woman?
Because both.
Okay.
But mostly because she's a woman. Because, remember when Hillary ran for the Senate against Rick Lazio got too close to her. And that
physically got too close to her
during a debate, and he just went like that, and she went like that in the polls. Yeah. So this is something that men are traditionally fearful of, seeming too confrontational with her, with any female politician. The thing is, she's out there saying great things. I have to say, and I like her. We both studied Greek and Latin. So anyway, But the thing that she has that kills her is, why didn't Mitt Romney win? Because Mitt Romney in 2012, because Mitt Romney laid off a lot of people and outsourced and did things like that. It's pretty clear that voters in the middle just couldn't get sucked over to his side because they had reservations about him. So while I don't think Carly Fiorina is really running for president, I think she was hoping to be a running mate. Why would you pick her for a running mate when she could, that very polarizing signature?
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the thought is maybe she's trying to go for a cabinet position in the next administration. We know her very well here in California because of her Senate run against Boxer. And I have to say, this is a woman who knows media so well. I mean, when she started her run for Senate, she called up and said, let's sit down and talk. We went to a Starbucks right here in the financial district, sat down with her for like 2 hours. She has this very interesting, she was a secretary, worked her way up. She knows real life, and she knows how to give a speech, do a debate, and that's how she's come up in the polls. She knows, and this is her strategy. She has hit every, interview on every channel out there to just raise her numbers in those polls, and she's done it very well. And then if she's not there on that stage, I think it's going to be a problem for the Republicans.
Yeah, they want her to be one of the top 10 people in the debate because she will add to the conversation. For example, we always hear her described as the only woman candidate in the Republican field. Well, that's true for Hillary too. So Republicans would like to see her in the debate.
She is arguably the best. Like public speaker too. I mean, she does a great thing. And she's like in a sit down situation. She's like as close to a real person as you can get to be with a politician.
Absolutely.
And, but the problem
saying a lot.
That's when the bar is extremely low. But the thing is, she laid off 30,000 people. Her story is bad. Her personal story is good. The secretary, she knows that, but her professional story is bad. Fired at HP.
Well,
It was not a good
Donald
term.
Trump was fired from NBC. You guys will talk to him.
That's his connection to the real people.
All roads lead to Trump.
And can I say, you know, one other candidate we got to mention, I think, is Bobby Jindal, because, you know, it's so interesting. He came out here to Silicon Valley not too long ago to do a bunch of fundraisers in the Indian American community. Of course, he's Indian American. And he had to cancel those fundraisers because about a week before they were scheduled, he made the comment that, well, if my father wanted to be known as Indian American, we would have stayed in India. And that did not play well with a community that is very, very proud of its roots. And he just got so much heat that those fundraisers had to be canceled. Since then, you've seen, you know, a million ways that he's tried to distance himself from being Indian American, including you'll talk to people here who say, you know, they would go to several people in the Indian American community, very prominent, would said, you know, they'd show up and they, one of them showed up, I won't say her name, showed up at his inauguration in a fabulous sari, you know, very proud. And she was, the whole family, his whole family's all in Western. They don't want anything to do with saris. He's like distance himself from an ethnic community that is just has been so successful in this country that they could, they could deliver a lot of money to him if they wanted to. And I think he's just burned that bridge.
Okay. Joe, we mentioned earlier Chris Christie, the New Jersey governor, expected to throw his hat into the ring. Was he still expected to be a candidate? He talked about having bad weeks.
He's had like a bad report
about various, you know, co-conspirators.
What kind of gives me a lot of pause about Christie is, you know, he gets a lot of love for, you know, I'm his blustery and I'll tell it like it is. But he keeps saying, I haven't decided yet whether I really want to run. Well, dude, I mean, you've been on the clock for like 3 years now. I mean, if you don't feel it, get off the pot, you know. But we don't say that at the Commonwealth Club.
You know.
We don't mix metaphors. That was a mixed metaphor. I think it's dubious at this point. You know,
he's going to run, but he
doesn't feel it. I mean, if he felt it, he would have jumped in earlier.
I think they're all trying to fit. Let's face it. Once the first one and the second one, the third one run, then you're trying to figure out how you can do catch up.
Your timing?
That's all it is your timing.
I don't know. I just don't.
I think he'll make it interesting.
He's going to be a better candidate than people think. I would not write him off. I think John Kasich, I agree with Carla, is a fascinating candidate to watch. He's really reached out to communities.
Yeah, I think he's sort of a dark horse you got to watch.
You know, he took Medi-Cal money from Obamacare.
He was a longtime budget leader in the House.
He was
right?
on the House Budget Committee. Yeah. That's when I first dealt with him. Mm-hmm. And he's a great fiscal conservative, but he's also a fiscal conservative who for example, really tries to deal with inmates and other people. He has an outreach. He's not just Republicans are looking for candidates who will talk outside the base. Mitt Romney just seemed to be, he did seem to be in a country club for a lot of that race.
Yeah, in case it's not like that.
And I think the party really, you know, you don't, you always.
And that's what Chris Christie brings. I mean, he seems like a real guy, and I think Kasich is another one like that. That's going to make it more interesting. I think Christie will make it more interesting.
Christie would make any of gathering more interesting.
Because he seems fresher and less scripted than the rest
of them.
Okay. So. Well, let's try to take a few things and kind of briefly before we get to our news quiz. Someone asks, will Jerry Brown attempt to abolish the California death penalty before he leaves office?
Wow, that's
a good question.
He should, because he has done everything he could to passively thwart it. There's a group of death penalty supporters who had to go to court to get the administration to go for a one-drug protocol, because it's pretty clear that the three-drug protocol will have court trouble with the court system here with the Ninth Circuit. I've asked him point blank about some of these issues. He says every single person on death row is guilty. And he doesn't. He just denied parole to someone who
buried a very heinous crime.
You know, he doesn't want to come out and do that extra step. Now the question is he going to run for president?
I still think that he dreams, he looks
in that mirror. But at any rate, so he should, because if you're going to oppose the death penalty and you don't want it to happen, then why are we paying for it? You know, he can't just commute sentences. That's not the way California commutation law works. Mm-hmm. But he could make some kind of moves to do some of that. He certainly could say, hey, there are 50 people here who I really don't think this should happen with. As it is, I think there are more suicides on death row now.
Really?
I don't think so.
I think he's got his hands full. He's only got a couple years left with two legacy projects that are in bad trouble, the high-speed rail and the water, issue. He's got the drought to deal with. Plus, you know, Jerry kind of tips his hand when he's starting to – he lays the groundwork early to get everybody thinking about this.
Realignment?
Not the death penalty. He's not going to do that.
The thing is, he's always campaigned saying that he would implement the law, that he wouldn't fight it.
That's so that
has been
said.
His message.
Right. Yeah.
But there are times that he says that he's going to do something and that's his message and he doesn't necessarily carry through.
I don't think he's going to go. I agree with Joe. I think he's got his hands full with this.
Okay. Some of you remember the Southern California lawyer who submitted a ballot initiative that's been called the Kill the Gays Bill.
Yes.
It's been thrown out now. Carla, is this case over? Can we put a
thermometer in? That case is over. The court said this should go. Mm-hmm. So I think but we haven't seen the end of controversial ballot initiatives. We just saw Capital Resources Institute is one of the conservative groups, is now collecting signatures starting like today, I think it was, for a new initiative that demands you use the bathroom of the sex you're assigned at birth. that is actually the ballot.
Who's going to be doing the carding on that?
And then you can be fined up to $4,000 if you don't. So that is the latest conservative. And that one, Kamala Harris did write the summary and title on it. Unlike the other one, she refused. Yeah. So they have until November to collect 300,000 signatures.
Well, and bills like that actually have gotten places in, I forget which of the Carolinas.
Yes, they have. And for any woman who's ever cut in front of a long restroom line and gone to the men's room, better be careful. You're up for the $4,000 fine on that one.
Well, Indigo Girls shows will really be difficult.
It involves the transgendered issue.
That's exactly
it.
It's a reaction to the transgender rights movement and
to a bill that was passed by the California legislature and signed by the governor that says that elementary school students can pick which gender they are and that the schools have to give them
use the facilities
that way, and if the parents don't even have a say in it, so
we'll see how that plays out, so we're not done with sort of conservative organizing on some of these problems.
Okay. One last thing, actually. Deborah, you've written about this. Just give us an update. Senate Bill 128. What is it, and what happened to it?
That's the assisted suicide bill pushed by Lois Woke. And basically, it went through the Senate, sailed through the Senate, mm-hmm. and people, basically, there was this is inevitable, it's changed, we're going to get this through the legislature, until it hit the Assembly, and in the Assembly, they've had to postpone the vote, and it may be history or may not. But basically there are a number of Democrats who don't want to vote for it, and there you go.
We'll see if it makes another trip around. Well, folks, let's go on to our news quiz. Fran, if you could come on up. I believe you're going to be our prize hander.
No double dipping either.
Joe wants to be the enforcer of the quiz. Yeah. She was saying that he feels.
Okay, so if you win once.
You throw everybody under the bus, don't you?
What do you know? Thank you, Fran. So if you've never been here before when we did this, I'm going to ask the question.
Just keeping an eye on you guys.
I'm keep, yeah. No, if you win, you can't.
If you win, you can't.
Can't win again. That's every time I've come here.
Okay.
I'm trying to win twice.
If you think you know the answer, raise your hand. I'll call on you and you can shout out the answer. And apparently, if you win once, don't try to win again, or you'll have to deal with Joe.
And Joe is not the friendly guy he seems to be.
Yeah.
Follow
I've
him on
killed
Twitter.
Before.
It's scary. Okay, let's start. And by the way, if you do get the question correct, then Fran will deliver some nice Ghirardelli chocolate that we make downstairs. We have several people down there.
Or God, I smelled it coming in.
Walgreens gives it to us. I don't know. Anyway, so the first question is, the international nuclear negotiations with what country were extended beyond tomorrow? Way in the back, sir, with the white? Iran, that's correct.
There we go.
Second question. Right. The killer who bombed a mosque in Kuwait is believed to be from what country? Sir, I saw your hand first. Saudi Arabia, that's correct. Right up. Yeah, so Fran can see you. It's not even worth answering the question if you don't get the chocolate afterward, right? Where were banks closed this week because of a financial crisis? I saw you first. That's right, in Greece. Puerto Rico's next. Right there. Let's see. A rocket from what private space company exploded? Right. SpaceX. It exploded right after takeoff this week.
Joe, can you keep track?
Okay,
I got 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. No shouting out either.
He's intimidating, isn't he?
He's ruthless.
Okay. With its win over China, the United States becomes the first country to reach the semifinals in all seven what? Sorry, what
Joe,
specifically?
Okay?
I think I should give it to you, frankly.
Joe, you can decide.
Look, he took the chocolate out of your hands there. You had it.
Yeah, sorry, Gary. I've got to give lady in the striped
shirt.
You're
down in the chocolate.
There.
Okay, there you go.
But just,
I love it.
I was going to say chocolate. The answer is the Women's World Cup. So it's, yes, soccer for Americans. Yes, football for the rest of the world.
Right.
Judy Moses, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, is the wife of a senior Likud politician in Israel. She apologized after saying what about the American president? Did you see this story?
Wow.
Anyone want, well, you're not going to. In the back, do you want to guess? That is correct.
Wow,
gentleman
good
in the
question,
great sweater
wow.
back there.
That's a good question.
Oh, I'm sorry. She said, she tweeted this. She said, I'm just repeating a joke. But soon after she tweeted it, of course, she deleted it. It is, quote, do you know what Obama coffee is? Black and weak.
Oh.
So,
ooh.
Okay. Didn't like that one? Okay. Police in Istanbul attacked what gathering this week? Sir, in the back. That's right, the Gay Pride Parade. Apple did not march in that one.
No.
Yes, apparently not. Hey, and don't give your chocolate to the guy next to you. He's already won. You thought I forgot. I marked you.
Joe has a memory like an elephant.
No, I don't. I'm the worst person to do this.
Next question. Disney has banned what evil from its parks? And I actually saw your name for your hand first, ma'am. Selfie sticks. That's correct.
They have?
Really?
Oh, oh my God.
What,
American.
You're not all behind that?
That's un-American.
That's great. What is a selfie stick? This is my audience. It's you know how we took a photo with our cameras before?
You go to Kim
That's
Kardashian
a selfie.
Tomorrow.
You can get a stick that'll make it go out further. So you can, I didn't say it was a good thing.
It's sticked, yes.
I'm behind Disney. Disney is doing God's work here by banning this thing. Okay, two more. CNN mistakenly reported that sex-related flag at a gay pride parade was really what kind of flag? Way in the back. Yes. ISIS. They thought it was an ISIS flag.
You saw the story, right?
It was not, and I'm not going to describe what the flag actually was.
We'll go off mic for that.
Yes, Google will help you with
appalled.
That. Okay, and our final question. Why was a Charleston, South Carolina police officer fired this week? Did you see this story? You guys don't even know? Oh, you put your phone down.
I was doing her. She's tweeting the selfie.
Oh, my God. That's
okay.
Terrible.
This is.
Yes. No.
That's Texas.
But I think that was. Was Texas. That Texas? That was Texas, anyway. I'm going to give it to you right there on the corner. He actually posted a photo of himself wearing Confederate flag boxer shorts.
Oh.
This is all true stuff, folks. Well, listen, we are going to have more news quiz questions and, of course, much more to discuss on Monday, July 13th at our next week-to-week program here at the Commonwealth Club. Thank you to our panel, Deborah J. Saunders, Joe Garofoli, and Carla Marinucci. Thank Thanks to all of you here and online and watching on TV. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.